If you follow news in Greater Cincinnati at all, you've probably heard names like Elwood Jones, who spent 27 years on death row before a judge ordered his conviction overturned. A new unit is investigating cases like Jones's to try and right wrongful convictions. I'm Nick Swartzell. On Cincinnati Edition, we talk about how that program will work and why Prosecutor's Office says it's needed. Joining me now are Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillich and Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office Conviction Integrity Unit Director Donald Caster. Thank you both for being here.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Prosecutor Pillich, I want to dive right in here. You announced the creation of this Conviction Integrity Unit and recently hired Donald Caster to lead it. Briefly explain what this unit is, what it does.
So a Conviction Integrity Unit is a semi-independent unit, basically within my organization, but a little bit tangent to it. And its job is to review allegations of wrongful conviction and unjust sentencing. And certainly we saw with the case of Elwood Jones that sometimes these things happen. And it's important that we have an avenue for defendants to seek some justice if they feel they've been wrongly convicted.
Yeah. And so what drove you to create this unit here in Hamilton County? What were some of the things that made you want to go down this route?
Well, conviction integrity units have been around in the United States for about 15 years, and there are five others in Ohio already. When I was on the campaign trail in 2023 and 2024, I started learning about allegations, and I started learning about how these units work. I think I first heard of them from Fanon Rucker back in 2020 when he ran for prosecutor. So my interest was intrigued, and I really wanted to focus on delivering justice with integrity. And if you want justice with integrity, sometimes you have to review your old work. Whether mistakes were made intentionally or just because they happened to be made because of the rules at the time, we really ought to go review those and make sure actually the real criminal is the one who was convicted and is serving time in jail.
Sure. So how long have you been, your office been working on putting this program together? And what are some of the considerations you had to weigh in deciding like how exactly the program would look? Mm-hmm.
So I certainly had campaigned on this, and it was, I think, the third major project I took on. I first took on parental leave because we had a haphazard policy when I came in. And then we worked on developing our training for our new prosecutors. And then this was number three. And it's really taken about 10 months to get to where we are now. The first thing we had to do was decide how are these structured across the country. So we did a lot of research on what these units look like in other places like Detroit and Indianapolis and places like that. I think Pittsburgh is another close example. And then we consulted with national organizations that actually research this as part of their a university program. And finally, we had to decide how many people needed to be in this unit for it to be successful. And then I had to ask the county commissioners to fund those positions. And I'm really grateful that the county commission thought this was important enough that they did give us funding for three positions to be in this division.
And how much was that funding?
I want to say it's about $330,000, so salaries plus benefits.
Gotcha.
Yeah. For three positions, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Donald, I wanted to ask you a bit about your background. What led you to doing this wrongful conviction work?
Sure. So for the last 14 years, I've been with the Ohio Innocence Project at the University of Cincinnati. Prior to that, I was a prosecutor in the Butler County Prosecutor's Office in the Appellate Division of that office. And before that, I had done a combination of civil rights work on behalf of plaintiffs and criminal defense work. And when the opportunity came up to do this, I was hearing a lot from Connie's public statements that made me think this was going to be an effective unit, that Connie was committed to making this a legitimate, real organization. So I decided to apply because the opportunity to do this work on behalf of the people of the state of Ohio and specifically on behalf of the people of Hamilton County and to do it right was too difficult to pass up.
Yeah. A lot of folks are familiar with the Innocence Project, but for those who aren't, maybe give us a brief like thumbnail of what they do.
Sure. For those who aren't, the Ohio Innocence Project was founded in 2003, and its mission is to both educate the public as to the causes of wrongful convictions and to identify wrongful convictions and help those who were wrongfully incarcerated. So it's a group of lawyers and law students, and the lawyers are also law professors at the University of Cincinnati College of Law. Incarcerated people write in, they say that they've been wrongfully convicted, and OIP looks at the case to determine, first of all, if that looks like it's true, and second of all, whether or not there's a legal justification to go forward on their behalf in court.
Sure. Now, it's probably hard to know exactly, but what do we know about how often wrongful convictions have been happening in Ohio?
It is hard to know exactly. We know that just on the registry of the National Registry of Exonerations, there's I think the number is 150 people on the National Registry of Exonerations throughout Ohio. We know that the Ohio Innocence Project alone, without getting into the other innocence organizations in the state, have freed since its founding 44 people on grounds of innocence. We know that there was a study conducted by the National Academy of Sciences about 15 years ago that estimated that in death penalty cases, which get a lot of scrutiny from the courts, there's probably a 4% error rate. So we know that wrongful convictions are too common.
Yeah. Are there any cases – I mean, you worked for Ohio Innocence Project for 14 years, right?
That's correct.
A lot of time along a lot of cases. Are there any that stick out to you as like really big illustrations of why a unit like this is necessary?
Absolutely. There's a couple. One is a Cuyahoga County case. I was fortunate to represent a young man named Michael Sutton who had a co-defendant named Kenny Phillips. They were convicted when they were 18 years old of being involved in a drive-by sort of shooting. And it should have been evident to the police really early on that they made a mistake. Even if their arrest was justified in the moment, it should have become really evident really quickly that they made a mistake. Nonetheless, the conviction stood. They lost their initial appeals, and it was another, I think it was 14 years before we were able to finally get them out of prison. And one of the things that finally did it to prove their innocence beyond any doubt was at their retrial, because in that case, the prosecutor's office, once the conviction was vacated, wouldn't drop it. They insisted on retrying these two young men. At their retrial, the recording of the radio traffic of the police was played that day. And the police officer who was the main complainant was able to hear saying something to the effect of, "Was this our radio call? Because I didn't really see what happened," even though in court at that time, he swore that it was Michael and Kenny who were involved with the crime. And that's a case where we wish the prosecutor's office had done the right thing, that they hadn't made everybody go through years of litigation, including a retrial. So that's a good example. I was not involved in the post-conviction proceedings in the case, but I think Connie's talked about Elwood Jones being a good example of why a conviction integrity unit is needed. So there are a lot of examples throughout the state of why conviction integrity units are needed. People shouldn't get out of prison on a whim. They've had a trial. They've had a direct appeal. But it shouldn't be as hard sometimes as it is. And when it becomes apparent that a mistake is made, a prosecutor needs to remember their oath, that their primary job is to do justice. And I think Connie's commission of a conviction integrity unit says exactly that.
I want to ask, are there cases that are still unresolved in your mind that you're coming into this role thinking about? And you don't have to give specifics if that's, you know, going to give away something. But, you know, are there things that you have on your list, maybe?
I mean, certainly there are cases that I worked at OIP that may or may not where defendants, client, former clients may or may not end up submitting applications. And we will deal with those through the rules of professional conduct. There may be instances where I'm conflicted out of a particular case because I worked on behalf of a defendant. There may be cases that were elsewhere in the project that I didn't have anything to do with. That are fine. And there's probably cases that I've heard of around the county that I had no involvement that I'm wondering if the people will write in to ask about.
Sure. And that leads me to next question, which I think both of you can talk about, is how will you decide which cases to take? And maybe we'll start with you, Prosecutor Pillage.
Thanks. First of all, I do want to let you know that we did conduct a national search to find our director, and how lucky we were that we found someone right here in our hometown. Yeah. So we're really pleased to have Don on board. So one of the things that we're going to do is create an advisory board. We're in the process of doing that now. And Don is drafting the first policy manual, and the advisory board will review that and offer some feedback and maybe advice on that, which will set up the internal operating procedures for how the unit operates. But in a nutshell, someone who wants to seek some help from the Conviction Integrity Unit can go to our website and fill out an application. You can fill it out right on the line. It's a fillable PDF, and then send it in to us, care of Don, and he will start to do the review process. The advisory board at some point will be included on helping advise on whether these cases make sense, if they should come to me, if they should stay with Don for a rejection or put on the table for future consideration. But I think Don can talk a little bit more about how he sees that moving forward.
Yeah, what are some of the factors you're going to look for?
Sure. Obviously, there's a couple of baseline factors, right? Was the person convicted of a felony? Was the felony committed in Hamilton County and prosecuted by the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, right? We don't have anything to do with federal cases and federal convictions. Can't help with those. Once we get past that, we need to look at, is the person saying that they're actually innocent? And then once they are, we can start to look at the case. We'll start with readily available public records, trial transcripts if there was a trial, the court records, other records that we can gather, our own office's records of the case. And if warranted from that examination, perhaps we go out and start to talk to witnesses, and maybe there's witnesses who hadn't come forward by the time of trial that are identified, and we would talk to those witnesses as well. So as we do that, we can start to get a sense of whether there's merits to a claim of innocence or not. Is there some evidence that the person really didn't do this? One of the best sorts of cases will be if there's forensic evidence that hasn't been subjected to testing that we can test. Is this a case where there was evidence collected that's likely to have DNA on it from the perpetrator of the crime that was never subjected to DNA testing? Well, we can go and we can, you know, if it was entered into evidence in the court, we can ask the court for an order to release it for DNA testing. Or if it's with one of our law enforcement partners, we can talk to them about having the evidence tested for the presence of DNA. Is there other type of forensic testing that can be brought to bear on the case? And through this, we can get a pretty complete picture of what actually happened in the case. And then the CIU team will write some sort of report. As Connie said, we'll take it to the Board of Advisors. And then together we'll make a recommendation to Connie on whether relief should be granted and what form that relief should take.
I see. Prosecutor Pilich, we've talked about Elwood Jones several times here, but I don't know that we've given listeners the kind of like overview of what that case was about. Talk to me a little bit about that case and how it relates to what the Conviction Integrity Unit will do.
Elwood Jones is a really good example of mistakes that can happen. They were long ago, intentional or not, they did happen. And it did convince me and my first assistant prosecuting attorney that some injustice was done. So Elwood was convicted of murdering a guest in a hotel in Blue Ash where he worked. And the prosecutor's office at that time, this was 1994, I think it was, in that time helped the Blue Ash police with the investigation. And they did a lot of things right. But one thing they did wrong, which nobody found out about for a decade or more, was that while they had interviewed dozens, maybe hundreds of people staying at the hotel, they didn't turn any of that over to the prosecutor. Or if the prosecutor had it, the prosecutor didn't turn it over to the defense. So it wasn't until some public records request revealed this information that we learned that it was close to 4,000 pages of interview, investigation evidence, including the interviews of people staying at the hotel. At least a dozen of them pointed to other people that did not look like Elwood. That plus some information on more modern testing, medical testing of blood samples and things like that. And just some interviews that we didn't get at the early with Elwood Jones and based on his attitude. So I asked my first assistant, who's my number one. She's a 30-year criminal trial lawyer. She's excellent. She runs the criminal division. I asked her to start taking a look at it. And then I, over in a different room, started taking a look at it. And we poured through thousands of pages of information, including transcripts, as well as some of these investigation reports that weren't turned over. And we both separately came to the conclusion that there was ample doubt here to preclude a conviction. And when I saw that, I knew that my job was to dismiss this because I shouldn't be wasting taxpayer resources when I knew that it would be unethical.
Yeah. What you said here, it brings up, in my mind, a question that's probably hard to answer, but I think that a lot of people wonder about, which is in these wrongful conviction cases, how often is it just, you know, oversights by, you know, law enforcement or prosecutors, or there just wasn't the evidence that we can get now, versus how much of it was some kind of misconduct, you know, by law enforcement or prosecutors, an effort to win a case in a way that isn't fair?
Well, you know, police officers are human beings. They're just as vulnerable to whatever is going on in their world that might make them take shortcuts, but I don't think it's all that often. I was a public defender for 6 years, and I knew that the police usually got the right person and they had the facts right. So that's not a concern of me. But I do know that mistakes do happen. Or perhaps the Ohio Supreme Court's rules of discovery were changed, but maybe changed too late to keep up with decisions by the United States Supreme Court. It doesn't bother me to decide who made the mistake or why. If a mistake was made or an oversight happened, that's when we step in, and that's when we can step in.
Yeah. Donald, did you want to weigh in on that?
Oh, I would just say it is really hard to quantify that and know, because a lot of the time when we talk about oversights by prosecutor's office, what we're talking about is like Connie was discussing in Mr. Jones's case, the failure to provide what could be favorable evidence to the defense. And are there instances where police or prosecutors do that intentionally because they don't want to hurt their case? Sure, that happens. But I think a lot more of the time what happens is that a prosecutor or police officer is looking at the use of that evidence from their own standpoint. And they're saying, look, I've got a strong case. This evidence doesn't touch my case. And they're putting themselves in the position of a defense attorney and what the defense attorney could do with that evidence at trial. So a lot of the time it's a question of judgment. And that's the way the case law around exculpatory evidence has been set up. So a lot of the time it's a question of judgment and not intentional malfeasance.
And one of the things that my office and I have been trying to do is we meet with the Hamilton County Chiefs of Police Association at their monthly meetings. And pretty much since we started going to those in January of 2025, when I started, we've tried to communicate some of the challenges we have with some police officers, some especially when there's new people who've only been on the job a few months. They haven't quite gotten everything together. And sometimes as Don was saying, they'll see some evidence in their file and they'll say, well, that's not relevant. I don't need to give that. But we really do need that. And we've had judges gently persuade us that that's what we're supposed to do. Let's put it that way. So we've been trying very hard to communicate with them and improve the police training in that way. And I'm confident that we're making headway.
Some of these high-profile murder convictions that get vacated, they take a lot of the attention. But there's other issues, too, that have kind of come up. The Inquirer published an investigation in 2024 that called into question the reliability of some of the informants prosecutors used to put together cases in Hamilton County. WVXU was part of an investigation in 2023 that reviewed past instances of misconduct at trial by prosecutors. Did these kind of issues inform the work that the CIU will do or the creation of the unit?
I'd have to say it did make me believe that this unit was very much needed. I read the reporting that you did. I read the reporting from the Columbia School of Investigative Journalism. It greatly concerned me, and I know that I want to run a tighter ship than that. Obviously, we don't go to the jail and find jailhouse snitches. That's what the police do. But I think the leadership in the police department and in the sheriff's office is pretty strong right now. And I think they're trying to do the best thing.
Yeah. Did you want to weigh in on that question, Don?
I would just say that, of course, it'll inform case selection, right? As we're looking at cases, of course, we're aware of some of those most common causes of wrongful conviction. And this isn't specific to Hamilton County, right? We know nationwide eyewitness identifications that are faulty are a big reason for wrongful convictions. We know the testimony of incentivized informants, that is, informants who are giving testimony in exchange for some sort of break on their own case, are a major cause of wrongful convictions. We know that flawed forensic science, that is science that at the time it was given, people thought was valid, but now we know better then. Is a big cause of wrongful convictions. So as we look at these cases, we'll look at what was raised at trial with an eye towards whether one of those factors influenced a jury's decision or not.
I see. Donald, you kind of gave us a glimpse into this already, but I want to maybe draw it out a little bit more. What will the day-to-day work look like in this unit? How does the investigation process unfold? And, you know, how sure are you going to need to be that a conviction was wrongful to do that investigation?
It's a lot less sexy than what you see on Law and Order, that's for sure. It's a lot of document review. It's a lot of sifting through court records. It's a lot of sifting through police records, through trial transcripts, through when the defendant will give us access to them, to their defense counsel's files, to see what the defense attorney was given at the time of trial. There's a lot of paperwork at first. From there, if it's warranted, the investigation moves to the field. We'll see what witnesses are saying. Sometimes an incarcerated person with a claim of wrongful conviction already knows of a witness who has recanted their testimony, and that person will need to be talked to. Maybe there's somebody who wasn't willing to testify at the time of trial, but now with the passage of time is willing to talk about it. And those people will need to be talked to. Maybe there's forensic work that needs to be done, and we'll make sure in the CIU that we're up to date, as are the amazing criminal trial team that Connie has assembled, up to date on the most recent forensic techniques and DNA testing analysis techniques. Is there new science that can be brought to bear on a case? And if there is, we'll look to that. And the answer to how sure you have to be pretty sure. Because we're doing this work on behalf of the people of Hamilton County. I don't want to let somebody, I don't want to be the cause of somebody going home who shouldn't go home. I never wanted to do that when I was at OIP. I had the flexibility to only represent clients whose innocence I genuinely believed in. And that's what we'll be doing now. We'll only be going forward on behalf of people for whom we believe a real injustice was done. You've got to be really pretty sure before you go. And I know from talking to Connie, she had that level of certainty with Mr. Jones. So there'll be a lot of work around it. And after all the investigation is complete, there'll be a lot of talking internally about the office, about whether we're doing the right thing with the case.
That's all the time we have for today. I've been talking with Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillich and Conviction Integrity Unit Director Donald Caster. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Nick Swartzel. Thanks for listening.